Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Billy Weaver had travelled down from London on the slow afternoon train, with a change at Swindon on the way, and by the time he got to Bath, it was about 9 o'clock in the evening, and the moon was coming up out of a clear, starry sky over the houses opposite the station entrance. But the air was deadly cold, and the wind was like a flat blade of ice on his cheeks. "Excuse me," he said, "but is there a fairly cheap hotel not too far away from here?" "Try the Bell and Dragon," the porter answered, pointing down the road. "They might take you in. It's about a quarter of a mile along on the other side." Billy thanked him and picked up his suitcase and set out to walk the quarter mile to the Bell and Dragon. He had never been to Bath before. He didn't know anyone who lived there, but Mr. Greenslade at the head office in London had told him it was a splendid city. "Find your own lodgings," he had said, "and then go along and report to the branch manager as soon as you've got yourself settled."
If Billy had only gone to the Bell and Dragon, we might have had another month of fantasy stories ahead of us. I imagine at that hotel, there's just a dragon working the front desk with a bell in front of him, kind of surly.
Today, we are here to talk about The Landlady, a short horror story by author Roald Dahl. Who was that reader?
Chris, that was your wife, Rachel Lackey.
I don't think that was. I know what my wife sounds like. That was not my wife.
Oh, I don't know how to react to that. Are you okay? Well, we were just trying to repeat last week's joke. Now I'm really concerned about you. Well, I assure you, Chris, that is your wife, Rachel Lackey, unless some kind of invasion of the body snatchers thing is going on. We'll talk after this episode.
Okay.
So everybody in the audience knows Rachel is the host of the popular podcast, Rachel Watches Star Trek. And if you want to know what that show is about, the title says it all.
Yeah.
To all of our patrons joining us here on Strange Studies of Strange Stories, Happy New Year. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. We are so grateful for your support, and we hope you stick with us in this new year. We've got a lot of great stuff coming up.
This one, The Landlady, it did feel a bit like Robert Aichman doing Lovecraft's The Picture in the House. That's what I thought it kind of was.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, it's a pretty straight up, don't judge a book by its cover, you know, kid in trouble kind of story, but it had the strangeness to it that I thought merited inclusion. So let's just start at the beginning.
So our story begins with a young businessman, Billy Weaver. When I say young, he's 17 years old, which I guess in the 50s, you know, being a young guy, that's a, you know, you start working when you're 17 for a company in a suit.
Right.
Doing stuff.
Sure.
Now he's just arrived from London to Bath, and it's 9 o'clock at night. He's asked the porter for a good cheap place to stay, and the porter suggests the Bell and the Dragon, as we heard at the top.
Yep.
Do you have any idea what the top pub names are in the UK?
Oh, God. The Slaughtered Lamb, maybe? No, I don't know. What do you know what they are?
Well, yes, I looked this up because
Came informed.
Well, yeah, because I was curious about this, but this is an article from 2021. The top five most popular name in the UK is the Plough.
Of a pub? The Plough, okay.
The Plough, 283 of those. The White Hart is number four with 301 pubs called that, which I've never
White
heard.
Hart, like H-A-R-T.
Yeah.
Like a stag or a
like
deer.
Like a stag, exactly.
Gotcha.
I haven't heard of that. Three, Royal Oak. There's 412 of those. The second most popular one is The Crown, 489.
That's just because of Netflix.
People love that show. And the number one is The Red Lion with 529. There are a lot of Red Lions. I've seen them around here.
There's a Red Lion in Silver Lake in Los Angeles.
Right, there you go. And I think Red Lion is Scottish, and it comes from the time of James IV, from when I was able to try and figure out, I'm like, what the hell is a Red Lion and why is it so popular? But I've seen some people say that it might be John of Gaunt. That was a knight who died in 1399.
Of alcoholism? What does that have to do with a bar?
I don't know. But people like this Red Lion thing. I'm not exactly sure why.
It does sound cool.
But some unusual pub names that I found that I really liked. The Drunken Duck.
There you go.
In Cumbria. That's pretty good. The Butt and the Oyster.
Yeah, I think there's a Butt and Oyster in Chicago, but it's a little, the nature of it's a little different.
The Nobody Inn is the name of a pub in Devon. Pretty good. And then this is the one that made absolutely no sense to me. This is in London. It's called the Mayor of Scaredy Cat Town.
That's an awesome name.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Well, this pub is the Bell and Dragon. It's a pub with rooms on top.
Yeah, yeah.
I've stayed in one of those before. Pretty good.
There's one that's not too far away from here that we just walked by the other day that had rooms in it. And I've always wanted to stay in a pub.
Yeah, of course. You get a room above the bar, and then in the bar, somebody tells some story that's going to influence what you do for the next week or two.
Exactly. And I get my chemicals up there and do my experiments.
Do your experiments, and there's probably somebody, you know, in the corner in shadow wearing a cloak or something.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. Maybe he's a bad guy. Who knows?
Then that's the fun of staying at a pub.
Yeah.
Now, our guy, Billy, he's walking to this pub. It's cold. It stank. But it's through this residential area. A lot of old houses, but they're not maintained very well.
He's got his brand new suit on. It says he was trying to do everything briskly these days. Briskness, he had decided, was the one common characteristic of all successful businessmen. The big shots up at head office were absolutely fantastically brisk all the time. They were amazing. That made me laugh.
It's funny.
And because my time spent in business, I have met a lot of people who seemed very busy but did very little.
Oh, boy.
But to Billy's characterization, he just doesn't know anything about the world, so he has to imitate what other people are doing. I can really remember that feeling of starting out around that age, being so clueless and knowing you're clueless, but really not wanting to let on as if anybody thinks otherwise. You don't know that everybody already knows you're clueless just because you're young, but I'll be damned if I'll let anybody know. I know everything about everything. So the porter recommended the Bell and Dragon. He's headed there through this old neighborhood. It's run down. The houses at one point were very swanky. They're very tall. They've got long stairs leading up to them off the street.
Yes.
No businesses around here.
So he passes this one place that catches his eye. It has a sign that says bed and breakfast. Peeps into the window and he sees it's this warm place. There's a fire burning in the parlor. A little dachshund sleeping in front of the fire, all curled up. There's a parrot in the cage. He likes the look of it, but he's also a little freaked out by the idea of B&Bs in general. Just that it's weird kind of staying in somebody's house and then they're there and you're just got to kind of pretend that you're not there. And it's just strange. And he also thinks that it's going to be more expensive than the pub.
Of course.
The pub also has darts and beer and people to talk to. So yeah.
Much better for a young person.
Exactly. So Billy is, of course, going to go to the pub. As he begins to walk away, he feels compelled. The strange powers taking over his mind. Bed and breakfast is just playing over in his head over and over again. And then he finds himself just walking right up to the door and ringing the bell. How do you feel about B&Bs?
I've only stayed in a few and I wasn't in love with the experience, but I think I was too young. I stayed in some B&Bs when I was probably in my 20s and I wanted to be out doing other things. You know, it's hard to sit there and catch up with somebody who's a lot older than you. So it is a surprise that he would do this. Do you like doing those kinds of things, B&Bs?
We stayed in Munich at this, I guess was a B&B. We stayed upstairs. The people lived downstairs, but they were super nice and they had the perfect balance of helping you out and staying out of your business, like, which is an art form. Be able to sense what you need, but also be able to pull away and not like talk to you too much or get into your business or, you know, just let you alone because you're on your holiday. So that was a pretty good experience. But we've stayed at other places where either they're just ghosts and they're not there and you can't get all the stuff you need, or they just want to talk to you and you're like, I've got a vacation to do. So finding that balance is hard, but if you can find it, it's great.
Too much stuff on the bed, usually. That's my conclusion. There's too many pillows. It's like a doll. Where do I put this? It was interesting because Billy sees the dachshund in the room and he sees this parrot in a cage. And it says in the story, animals were usually a good sign in a place like this, Billy told himself. Why does he think that? Is it because people who have animals are generally kind?
Yeah,
or?
I guess that if they're taking care of animals, there is a certain, unless you're a psycho, but there's a certain benevolence in owning an animal because there's definitely more work goes into it than you really get out of it.
Like Billy's never been to Florida, I guess. He's got an alligator in there. He must be a kind person. There's a wildcat that does seem like it's tearing up that room, but
our friend Elliot used to have a monitor lizard, and the thing was the worst. It was the most vile creature, and you couldn't go anywhere near it because it freaking hated people. And he always goes, be careful because that tail can break your arm. And I'm like, oh my God, why do you have it?
I don't know.
Where's the joy?
Why are you keeping this animal? Anyway, I thought this was the section of the story that I felt moved it from the crime category to the strange category.
Yes.
Not entirely, but it was the compulsion that you mentioned. When you listen to the text, it says,
Billy decided that he would walk on and take a look at the Bell and Dragon before making up his mind. He turned to go, and now a queer thing happened to him. He was in the act of stepping back and turning away from the window when all at once his eye was caught and held in the most peculiar manner by the small notice that was there. Bed and breakfast, it said. Bed and breakfast, bed and breakfast, bed and breakfast. Each word was like a large black eye staring at him through the glass, holding him, compelling him, forcing him to stay where he was and not to walk away from that house. And the next thing he knew, he was actually moving across from the window to the front door of the house, climbing the steps that led up to it and reaching for the bell.
I can kind of see that happening naturally, like you're frozen in some indecision, and then any sign can break the spell.
Right.
Why am I deliberating over this? The bed and breakfast sign's right there. I'm going to go in. But it, especially that it's like a black eye staring out at him, it just had the mark of the supernatural, this compulsion to go into this place.
It felt like it. Just as he rings the bell, the door is answered, like she was right by the door waiting.
Yeah, normally you ring the bell and you have at least a half minute's wait before the door opens. It says, this dame was like a jack-in-the-box. He pressed the bell and out she popped. It made him jump. Indications it's a horror story that he put a jump scare in right there.
Now, he describes the woman as being 45 to 50. She has a round face. She reminds Billy of a friend's mom. And she says his room's all ready for him and ushers him inside.
She's got a warm, welcoming smile, so there's no reason not to follow her in. But it continues with, Billy found himself automatically starting forward into the house. The compulsion, or more accurately, the desire to follow after her into that house was extraordinarily strong.
Now, she says the room is 5 and 6 pence a night, including breakfast, which for him is way cheap. He thinks, you know, I'd be willing to pay twice that money for a place to stay. So this is great.
Although it could be suspicious if something's too cheap, although she disarms him a little bit by saying, oh, I can drop breakfast to make it cheaper.
Yeah.
Which just lets you know that in her mind, this might stretch his resources a little bit. So she's obviously just from another time or whatever.
He goes to hang up his coat and he sees that there are no other coats or hats there. She says, it's just the two of us. And he's confused. This is a very nice place and it should be full. But she explains that she's choosy about who she takes on. And it all seems like it's, for me, going someplace naughty. Perhaps that says more about me than the story.
Well, or just that you maybe didn't have expectations coming into it. Because I did a little bit, so.
Oh, right. No, I
wasn't thinking about that. What was it made you think that?
But this, it's here, she says. But I'm always ready. Everything is always ready day and night in this house. Just on the off chance that an acceptable young gentleman will come along. And it is such a pleasure, my dear, such a very great pleasure when now and again I open the door and I see someone standing there who is just exactly right. She was halfway up the stairs and she paused with one hand on the stair rail, turning her head and smiling down at him with pale lips. Like you, she added, and her blue eyes traveled slowly all the way down the length of Billy's body to his feet and then up again.
Well, there you go.
She's checking him out. She takes him up to the second floor of the house and she shows him his room. She calls him Mr. Perkins and he quickly corrects her. Mr. Weaver is his name. She explains she put a hot water bottle in the bed to make it nice and warm. And this is something that I've never done in my life. But in England, we do it here. And my kids, they always want a hot water bottle in bed with them at night.
You don't put it in there to warm the sheets up beforehand. It stays in bed.
Yeah, they leave it. They go to bed with it like kind of a hot teddy bear.
I guess I'd be too worried about it exploding in the in the bed.
It's never happened.
It hasn't?
No. I think it's pretty unlikely. I think they'd leak before they would explode. But you never know. So it could happen.
Why don't you just get a water bed and fill it with extremely hot water? And then you don't have to keep doing it every day.
Well, the thing with the hot water bottle being in the bed is you can excise it. If you're warm enough, you can just kick it out of bed. But if you're on a hot water bed, you're stuck on a hot bed.
I wonder how many people, like, the kid throws it out of the bed and then horribly burns his parents because they were coming in to give him, you know, a glass of milk or something. I got a little research to do after this episode.
You do. Get to
Speaking of blankets, when he sees the room, there's not just a blanket with a hot water bottle in it. The sheets are all turned back for him to climb right in.
Yeah.
So she was really expecting him.
Yeah, it's a little disturbing because it makes you think that she every night gets everything ready for a guest just in case somebody's going to show up. And she says this, I'm so glad you appeared. I was beginning to get worried. Like she expected him or something? That's odd. Now she asks if he's hungry and he says, no, thank you. And she asks him to come down and sign the guest book after he's unpacked his bags. It's the law, she says, and we don't want to break the law. She leaves him for a bit, and he knows that she seems odd. He says she's off her rocker, but that's great. She's very kind, generous, and cheap. He thinks that maybe she lost a son during the war, and that's what she's kind of dealing with.
Yeah, he's sort of making up excuses for her off-the-wall behavior, but it's that thing that comes with just experience. You and I were talking about hiring people a little before the break, and I was talking about how I made a decision once when I was younger to hire an employee who was really kind of seemed kooky. And myself and the other manager were like, well, this person's going to bring that kind of fun, kooky energy to the office. So we should make that decision. And then this person turned out to be a total nightmare because they were crazy. We knew it. Similarly, you know, if something seems weird, you should skate. She's acting odd. This is probably the price is too low. There are a lot of indications
Yeah.
That this is a weird situation, but he's just coming up with reasons why they're not.
After unpacking, he goes downstairs. It's nice and warm. He walks over to the guest book and he sees that there are only two other names, Christopher Mulholland and Gregory W. Temple. Something about the names rings a bell in Billy's head, but he's not sure why. The landlady pops up behind him, another little jump scare, and he says, you know, the names in the book seem familiar to me.
Such charming boys, she says, and she's holding this big silver tea tray.
Yeah. He asks if they were famous cricketers or footballers, and she says that she wasn't aware of them being famous at all.
I don't think they were famous, but they were extraordinarily handsome, both of them. I can promise you that. They were tall and young and handsome, my dear, just exactly like you. Now, even then, I thought maybe this is a Miss Havisham situation, like in Great Expectations. Like, perhaps she was left by somebody. So she's sizing these handsome guys up to exact vengeance upon them. I didn't think it would have been really a trick if at the end they just slept together and he left and went on and, you know, was successful at business. Would have been kind of funny.
Yeah, well, he also notes that the last entry is from 2 years ago, and Mr. Mulholland was just a year before that. And she says, time flies, she calls Billy Mr. Wilkins, and he has to correct her again. And she says, oh, I'm just scatterbrained. Sorry about
that.
He
even spells it out for her, Weaver, W-E-A-V-E-R. But this is not the first time he's had to correct her.
Yeah. And the more he thinks about the names in the book, Mulholland and Temple, he thinks maybe they were connected, like maybe they're a comedy act or something.
Yeah, like he knows each of their names individually, but they seem like they should go together. Hall & Oates wasn't a thing yet, but I imagine if it was, he would have gone like Hall & Oates.
Exactly. Now, she doesn't respond, and she just tells him that she's made tea and she's got some ginger biscuits.
I was pretty sure I knew why he knew the names. Mm-hmm. But it's a hook, you know, so yeah. I kept reading. I liked this. There is nothing more tantalizing than a thing like this, which lingers just outside the orders of one's memory. He hated to give up. So the fact that they're familiar to him,
yeah,
but he can't place it, is almost a distraction. Now he's going to start ignoring behavior because he's just thinking about that. Most TV viewing includes a round of, where do I know her from?
Yeah.
Such an interruption. I can't stand. I try not to use the IMDb or anything for a while.
Uh-huh.
It always goes the same. Heather goes, oh, she's in everything. I know, but there's something specific from that everything.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's that
yes.
madness that seizes you, and that's happening to him.
Now, he sits down with the landlady. She pours some tea. He thinks maybe Mulholland was a schoolboy from Eton and suggests this to her, and she corrects him and says, no, Mulholland was a Cambridge undergrad. And they sit quietly and drink tea. And then he says this about her smell. Now and again, he caught a whiff of a peculiar smell that seemed to emanate directly from her person. It was not in the least unpleasant, and it reminded him, well, he wasn't quite sure of what it reminded him of. Pickled walnuts? New leather? Or was it the corridors of a hospital?
It made me wonder if this was some kind of deal at that point. You know, is he dead and imagining all of this? Like, maybe he's passed over, he is in a hospital?
Yeah.
And this is some nurse who treated other soldiers or something like that. These are the names, or I don't know.
Yeah.
In a practical sense, I just thought she's messing around with some kind of preservatives if that's the smell.
Yeah.
Pickled walnuts and new leather. It's got to be like a formaldehyde kind of smell.
Yeah, yeah. Now, she mentions that Mr. Mulholland loved tea and he drank loads of it. Billy said he must have left fairly recently. And the landlady says, left? My dear boy, he's never left. He's still here. Mr. Temple is also here. They're on the third floor, both of them together. Just earlier, she said it was the two of them that were there. Nobody else was there with them. And if they're there, where are their coats? This is what I'm thinking. But Billy doesn't seem to think anything about this when she says it.
Even if you don't think of it as that they're dead up there, I'm just thinking, if they're still here, what are they doing up there?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was so creepy. But she pats him on the knee.
Yeah, she does.
And, you know, maybe because I'm the age of the landlady, this flirtation component seems more plausible to me. I think if I was reading this when I was 17, I'm between 45 and 50. This old bag, you know, like your perception changes a little bit.
Oh, it does, yeah.
It's sort of like I was watching, I had The Shining on the other day while I was doing some work. And, you know, when Danny goes to the hotel room, or I'm sorry, it's the dad, it's Jack Nicholson goes to the hotel room and the old lady comes out of the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a horrifying scene.
Yeah.
And then this time I was like, she's not so bad.
Yep, the older you get, you're going to go, yeah, why is she so creepy? What's creepy about her? She looks fine to me.
She shouldn't be there, but come on. She's kind of
good looking.
She's kind of attractive, yeah.
She asks him about how old he is, and he says 17. And she says, 17, a perfect age. She says that he has the most beautiful teeth, whiter than Mr. Temple's teeth. But Mr. Temple had great skin, not a blemish on his whole body. And and that catches Billy, and he says, what? What now? Wait a minute. His skin was just like a baby's, she says. And then they sit there in awkward silence again. He notices the parrot that he saw earlier is not actually alive. It's taxidermy. And she says that she did it. She was the taxidermist, as well as little Basil pointing at the dog. And he looks down and he finally notices that that dog is taxidermied as well.
She's really proud of it. It says he put out a hand and touched it gently on the top of its back. The back was hard and cold. And when he pushed the hair to one side with his fingers, he could see the skin underneath, grayish black and dry and perfectly preserved. That unnerved me a little bit. I don't know why. Probably because that is what it's like to touch a taxidermied animal in it. It's creepy.
It is. And we end with this.
Good gracious me, he said. How absolutely fascinating. He turned away from the dog and stared with deep admiration at the little woman beside him on the sofa. It must be most awfully difficult to do a thing like that. Not in the least, she said. I stuff all my little pets myself when they pass away. Will you have another cup of tea? No, thank you, Billy said. The tea tasted faintly of bitter almonds and he didn't much care for it. You did sign the book, didn't you? Oh, yes. That's good, because later on, if I happen to forget what you were called, then I can always come down here and look it up. I still do that almost every day with Mr. Mulholland and Mr. Temple, Billy said. Gregory Temple. Excuse my asking, but haven't there been any other guests here except them in the last 2 or 3 years? Holding her teacup high in one hand, inclining her head slightly to the left, she looked up at him out of the corners of her eyes and gave him another gentle little smile. No, my dear, she said. Only you.
And that's the end of the story.
Oh, man.
Now, cyanide supposedly smells like bitter almonds.
Right.
But most of the time, it doesn't smell of anything. It's pretty odorless, tasteless poison. That's why people use it a lot of the time. It's said that some people can detect that bitter almond smell.
Yeah.
So obviously this feels like it's pointing at the fact that she would get these guys in there, poison them, and then taxidermy them. And that's why she's got those two other dudes up in that room. They're all stuffed. I mean, that's the implication. But is there an alternative way of looking at this? Like maybe that isn't exactly what's going on?
I think there is. Roald Dahl had an anthology of ghost stories that he wrote an introduction to. It's called Roald Dahl's Book of Ghost Stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's other authors that he liked who wrote ghost stories. And in this introduction, he states he always wanted to write a ghost story, but he'd never been quite able to. And the closest he came was with The Landlady. But after reading it through, he decided that he had not brought it off, so changed the ending to make the twist non-supernatural.
Oh.
So when I read that, I think, well, this sort of explains why there are all these suggestions that something else is going on. I wonder what his original ending was.
Right.
Because how does she have those men arranged up there? Why is it one a year?
Yeah.
That sounds almost like, I don't know, like an X-Files thing or something.
Yeah, that there's some kind of cosmic, when the stars are right, every year on this day, this thing happens, somebody comes
in. It's got to be a tall, handsome young man.
The whole idea, you know, she called him Mr. Perkins. Like, what was that about? And maybe Mr. Perkins could have been, because we don't ever get her name. Maybe Mr. Perkins was her husband, or you know, he died, and she died, or he killed her, and she was the ghost. This day every year, somebody comes by, goes in, stays in the place, and then when they wake up, the house is empty and totally.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking of other possibilities if it was a ghost story.
It had all those hallmarks, Or maybe she was just affecting a poor memory to appear even more harmless, because I think it seems like the landlady gets taught in quite a bit of fiction classes, and I think that it's a good short story of example of don't judge a book by its cover.
Right.
The woman seems very, you know, he makes all these judgments. Oh, she's got animals, so she must be nice, and the place is well kept, so there must be no menace here. And I'm saying an old lady, she's 50 years old, so
45
she's the age of my favorite podcast host. Yeah. So she must be harmless. Probably a big Manimal fan.
Yeah.
That's probably what he's thinking. But yeah, it's got something there. I like that he went ahead and gave it a, because Picture in the House doesn't have that supernatural thing either.
No.
The Lovecraft story. It's just a crazy dude who got the wrong idea from this book. It had very much the same conclusion where the blood drips on the pages of the book, but you don't see what happens next.
Right.
Similarly, is she just going to let him die of the poison and then stuff him and then put him in that bed up there? Or we don't know. Maybe they just make out.
Yeah, there's
maybe she's just roofying him.
It could be. I got the impression that that's what could be going on. But there was no cleansing bolt of lightning at the end.
There was. You're right. That is the... That's the trick that Roald missed.
Yeah. Next time, buddy.
Next time, maybe you'll do it. Maybe you'll get it done, the cleansing bolt of lightning. I really dug this one, and I read a bunch of Roald Dahl's other stories. At first, I didn't think we could do a whole month of these because they weren't quite strange stories. They were more about a wicked, ironic twist.
Mm-hmm.
I read Mrs. Bixby and the Colonel's Coat, The Way Up to Heaven, The Hitchhiker, None of them were really doing it for me. Luckily, our listeners chimed in on Lamb to the Slaughter on the comments section, and they offered up some recommendations we are going to go with this month. So next up, we're going to do The Sound Machine.
Nice.
And then after that, The Great Automatic Grammatizator, which should prompt some interesting discussion.
Grammatizator.
Yeah, it's about an AI writing machine, basically. So,
very timely.
Get ready for that one.
Very timely.
I want to thank our reader, Rachel Lackey.
Again, I don't think that's her, but okay.
I mean, she did give a great performance, so perhaps.
Whoever that was,
yeah.
Great performance, but I'm not. Look, I know my wife. I don't think that was her.
Oh, man. I got to call somebody. Let's get the show over with. I'm really concerned. I also want to thank some patrons.
I'd like to thank Sean Lees.
Rosella Picciani, thank you.
Matt Baldwin, thank you.
Travis Lamp, what's up? Thank you.
Stian Jorsvik, thank you.
Christopher Anderson, thank you.
Thank you, Patters.
Peter Bowen, thank you.
Lyle Erickson, thank you.
I know.
Sophia Lindstrom, thank you. All of you are fantastic people. I hope you'll stick with us this year.
And with that, I'm Chris Lackey.
I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And you've been listening to Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Exclusively on Patreon.
Strange Studies of Strange Stories. Thank you.